The following is an Auburn Network production.
You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well on this November 5th, 2025. This is On the Line, the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. He is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on another beautiful day in the Auburn Opelika area, and tons to get to on today's show. College football, in terms of the playoff rankings, we've got a new home and home for Auburn to talk about, plus more coaching search to get into as well. We've got a great guest for you today, so another jam-packed show on this Wednesday afternoon. But Christian, happy Wednesday, sir. How are you?
I'm doing well. Happy Wednesday. Yeah, you mentioned it, getting a lot of the conversations continuing throughout the week, picking up some that we left off of a little bit yesterday. As we now know, the first college football playoff rankings that come out every single Tuesday up until late December, just about. And so gone with the AP poll. Now everybody's numbers will be a reflection of the college football playoff, but that hasn't been any short of any drama in there. So we'll definitely talk about that. That's how we start the show off today. And yeah, you mentioned a home and home was just announced with Auburn football that we'll get to here in just a little bit before Jordan Hill of Dogs 24/7 joins us at 2:30. And man, we opened up that can yesterday of the coaching search. Any names, whether that's a dark horse, whether that's realistic picks. We opened up that can yesterday, and we get to continue a really fun conversation with that here today.
Yep, and so outside of our one guest at 2:30, phone lines are open. If you want to be a part of the show, you can. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390 is the phone line number, or you can always shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box, which is already active today at 334-784-1067. As we start the show with college football playoff rankings, then we'll talk about the home and home, and then we'll get to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247. And the first playoff rankings of the year were released last night, and you've got your 1 through 25, and you have your bracket, right? And there's always a little bit of the confusion in trying to cross-reference things. And, of course, you have your five automatic qualifiers, but they don't have to be the four seeds. And, I mean, there's a whole lot of weird stuff in there. But for the most part, I think the rankings are relatively standard, right, compared to what we saw in the AP poll, where Ohio State is the number one team, Indiana the number two team, the Texas A&M Aggies are the three, Alabama is the four, Georgia the five, Ole Miss six, BYU seven, Texas Tech at eight, Oregon is at nine, Notre Dame at 10, Virginia 11, and Memphis at 12. That's the bracket, okay? That's the playoff bracket. Your thoughts on what that looks like in the rankings as a whole?
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much of an argument when you're hearing 1, 2, and 3. 4, 5, and 6, you could kind of, you feel like you could have a little bit of an argument, but with Alabama beating Georgia, Georgia beating Ole Miss, you feel like that's a little bit easier about how everything chalks up on that side of things. It is very interesting seeing that this is the very first one where you don't have those automatic qualifiers, right? With the 1, 2, 3, 4, and 12, those being those five spots to where BYU leads the way for the Big 12 at the 7 spot. Texas Tech right behind at the 8. I would be very surprised if Oregon does not jump a little bit. They're the 9 seed right now. I would expect them to jump a little bit more, and then seeing, again, how everything continues to play out. Texas is in there at 11 on the rankings side of things, but will they add another SEC team in there? Oklahoma right behind them, and how about Memphis? Unranked, but currently that 12 seed right now.
Yeah, and that's kind of that conversation about the G5 getting a guaranteed spot. You understand why they get that spot, to make it a little bit more fair, right? To make it more enticing for a team not in the P4 to at least have a shot to make it to the playoff. But yeah, we're talking about a Memphis team. Yes, they're ranked in the AP top 25, but they're not ranked in the college football playoffs. They're not a top 25 team, according to the committee, but yet they're going to jump 13 teams, if not more, to get into the playoffs. And so you can have that argument discussion if you want. I think there's a world eventually where making it fair for the G5 and things will not happen, because why should the P4 worry about that? Why should the P4, why should Texas right now, who's ranked 11th in these college football playoff rankings, why should they get the shaft because you want to make it equal for Memphis?
Yeah,
I think that's kind of a joke.
Unless they find a way to make it to where these G5 teams still have to play 4 or 5 P4 games. But even if that's the case, Texas is sitting there. If that's the example we're using, the Longhorns say, okay, give me your schedule, Memphis. Give me Chattanooga. Give me Georgia State, Troy, Arkansas, Florida Atlantic, Tulsa, UAB, South Florida, Rice, Tulane, East Carolina, and Navy. Texas is saying, please, if you're going to jump us, give me that schedule, and then we'll have a real conversation.
Yeah, I saw some people also having conversations online last night after the playoff rankings were released. And again, we want to hear your thoughts on it. 334-321-1390 or in the text box at 334-784-1067. I saw some people having a conversation about the SEC should be upset about how the playoff rankings went down. I mean, you've got the 3rd-ranked team, the 4th-ranked team, the 5th-ranked team, the 6th-ranked team. But I think there's conversations about Texas and Oklahoma, Vanderbilt, right? And then Missouri and Tennessee. I think the SEC's probably okay. The problem is, I think that Notre Dame being a part of the college football playoff right now is kind of laughable, in my opinion. And funny enough, we'll talk about Notre Dame coming up in just a little bit. But, man, what have they done? They have one top 20 win against USC, a team that you can make an argument shouldn't be ranked anymore. They lost their 2 big games to open the year. They've got wins over Purdue, who's winless in the Big Ten. They have a win over Arkansas, who is winless in the SEC. Right, that's still the case, right, for Arkansas? Yeah, no. Yes, winless in the SEC is Arkansas. So 2 P4 wins over winless teams in their own conference. But don't worry, they beat Boise State. Don't worry, they beat NC State. Don't worry, they beat Boston College. Give me a break.
And they beat a Miami team that you are very high on as well. They lost to a Miami team that you are very high on, which continues to look like a better win.
Yeah, so it's like, why does Notre Dame get credit for beating a USC team who's 6-2? With losses to Illinois and Notre Dame, and their only win is against Michigan, who's obviously not a playoff team right now, in my opinion. My point being, Texas and Oklahoma, in the argument about Notre Dame, they should be mad. They should be livid, because those two teams have better resumes than Notre Dame does.
Yeah, I feel like when you're looking outside the 12 teams that are in the brackets, there's a little frustration. I don't think there's too much frustration, at least when you're looking at the 12 team in the first round. The second round is where there could be a little bit more frustration, you could say, just because of, you feel like Georgia would be a big favorite over Memphis, and then it would be Alabama playing Georgia, to where one of your conference teams is going to get eliminated. Same thing with Ole Miss and Texas A&M, where those two teams would match up. So you'd have 4 SEC teams in the quarterfinals where you're guaranteed to kick at least one of your conference teams out.
I think the ACC is the conference that should be a little upset. And don't call me crazy. Don't wreck your car. I am going to go to bat for the ACC here for only like 28 seconds, so make sure you put a timer on. But Virginia and Louisville, look at those two teams. And then if you really want to go a step further, look at Georgia Tech as well. All three of those teams, Christian, do you know what they have in common other than that they play in the ACC? They all have one loss, but they also all, and I'm double-checking to make sure that my facts are correct here, I believe that they are. All three of those teams play in the ACC, we know. All three of those teams currently have just one loss, and all three of those teams, as I confirm it right here, yes, have a top 25 win. And all three of those teams on their remaining schedules, whether that's three or four games, do not play a ranked team here on out. So what happens if Virginia, Louisville, and Georgia Tech all went out? What happens then? What happens to the ACC? Because currently their one representative is Virginia. The ACC is going to have an argument and a conversation. Now, I think the conference is weak. I don't think going and having a strong record in your conference in the ACC this year is worth or the same value as a good record in the SEC or the Big Ten or even in the Big 12. But if you're those teams, to play devil's advocate here, if you're Virginia, okay, or if you are Louisville, let's say, since they're the ones on the outside looking in, Louisville has a great win. They beat Miami when they were ranked second in the nation, and their only loss is to Virginia. So tell me, if you are the Louisville Cardinals, why you should not have an argument, because all you can do is play the teams on your schedule, which remaining is California, Clemson, SMU, and Kentucky.
Yeah, you're basically hoping, and it's a big hope, that the rest of the conferences go a little bit anarchy, right? You need Iowa or Minnesota or USC to find a way to beat Oregon, so that way there's less of an argument on that side of thing, or hopes that USC and Washington can beat Oregon in back-to-back weeks, or hope that Georgia Tech loses to Georgia just so that way it knocks them out, so that way that adds even more validation for Louisville, because right now Virginia being that one representative, the only representative, and Notre Dame, you feel like being claimed by the ACC and everything except football, basically, doesn't give them any sort of credit either towards the Atlantic Coast Conference.
I misspoke about Georgia Tech. Louisville, Virginia don't have a ranked team on their schedule remaining. Georgia Tech has two.
Yeah.
Georgia Tech has Pitt and Georgia. But regardless, what
if Clemson at the time?
Yeah. They win that game. They lost to NC State this past week, but that's the thing. It's like, what happens if those teams went out, right? And again, I don't like the ACC. I think it's a bad conference. I think it's the worst P4, and it's not even close. But what if they – haven't we said 11-1 in a P4 conference is easily good enough to make it to the college football playoff?
Yeah, you're going to have a situation like that if ACC is the example of a team like Georgia Tech or Louisville is going to get left out because it has to be fair and there has to be a G5 team involved.
Which I think is wrong. I think that's wrong. But regardless, there's still a lot to be decided here. And I think the SEC's in a spot where it could still steal some bids. I think Texas and Oklahoma still have a lot to play for. And I think the Big Ten has three teams, and that's it. I think they have Ohio State, they have Indiana, and they have Oregon. Now, those are all three really good teams, and I think Oregon still has work to do to confirm that, but I don't trust USC to get hot down the stretch and make it. I don't trust Iowa or Michigan or Washington to get hot down the stretch and make it. The only way Washington could, it's thanks to that win over Illinois last week, who was ranked 23rd in the country. They would have to beat Wisconsin, Purdue, and UCLA, which shouldn't be hard. And they host the Oregon Ducks at the end of the season. If that's a 10-2 Washington team, and their losses are to Ohio State and Michigan, but they have wins over ranked Illinois and top 10 Oregon, doesn't the Huskies, don't they have an argument? Don't they have a say? Right? Here we are again. in a 12-team playoff, there will be some teams, just based off of what we're looking at here, there will be some teams who are on the outside looking in, who are frustrated, that feel shafted by the system that they're involved in.
Well, look at this weekend, too, with BYU and Texas Tech playing each other. That's right now as the 7 seed versus the 8 seed in the Big 12. That's the 11 o'clock game here this weekend. You use that as a perfect example of Texas, who's looking on the outside in right now. But if their one loss or their two losses are to Ohio State on the road and in the swamp in Florida, but you have wins over Oklahoma, Vanderbilt, and then you can beat Georgia and you can find a way to beat A&M, one of those two teams, you feel like 9-3 with a conference or a resume like that deserves some sort of argument, much less you beat both of those teams, you win out, and then A&M only has that one loss. I mean, why would you punish A&M? But why would you not grant Texas a spot? I mean, there's so many different situations, which is why we're happy there's still 3 to 4 weeks of football to be played, but it just brings back the common argument of whether it's the two-team playoffs, teams 3 and 4 are going to be upset. If it's a 8-team playoff, teams 9 and 10, or what we had the 4-team, where 5 and 6 had a little bit of an argument, even with the 12-team playoff right now, based off of the arguments and based off of the system that is implemented and how nobody really knows what the true determining factors are for who makes their way into the playoff, because it happens behind a closed door. And although there's now computer systems that they're going to keep using, even with the 12-team playoff, teams 13, 14, 15, and 16 are still going to be frustrated.
They are supposed to be putting more emphasis this year on strength of schedule, strength of record, stuff like that, which maybe that will go against the ACC. Again, I'm not cheering against the ACC. I'm just looking at that conference that's going to have some teams frustrated at the end. But if they do take strength of schedule and strength of record into account, that would be the thing the ACC gets left out on. But as it stands right now, the bracket that was released last night, Ohio State, the 1 seed, they would be awaiting the winner of Oregon and Texas Tech, so a possible Big Ten matchup in round 2. Indiana, the 2 seed, would wait on Notre Dame or BYU, so a possible college football playoff rematch from a year ago with Indiana and Notre Dame. Texas A&M is the 3-team, or the 3-seed rather. They would most likely get Ole Miss for an SEC matchup in the second round, and then Alabama at the 4-seed, they would most likely get Georgia, who plays Memphis, so another possible SEC matchup there as well. But there's a lot of games left, and things will change between now and December. We'll take our first break here in hour number 1. Come back home to Auburn, where they just made an announcement about a home-and-home that the Tigers have scheduled with a P4 team, but one that doesn't have a conference. We'll talk about that coming up next here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7 as we talk a little Auburn football, but not the conversation that's been on our minds the past couple of days. Some news that broke about 30 minutes ago or so that Auburn football has announced a new home-and-home added to the football schedule. And we know that Auburn has had some over recent years, right? Penn State, California, and some others. Baylor, right? Which was supposed to be a home-and-home, but
it is, Jacob. It is.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Sorry, that's on me. I forgot that
Auburn is hosting.
Auburn will be gladly hosting at Jordan-Hare Stadium East at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in downtown Atlanta. But this one, for now, that they announced today, for now, is a true home and home. And I'll leave my comments to myself. It is a home and home that Auburn football has announced. And we know that there were some in the past, and we know that there were some that were canceled because of the uncertainty of the future of college football. But this one was announced today. Auburn and Notre Dame have now scheduled a home-and-home on the football field, really fascinated by this. Notre Dame will host Auburn, so the Tigers will travel to South Bend in 2027, and then Notre Dame will travel to Auburn in 2028. Tigers go to Notre Dame in 27. Notre Dame comes to Auburn in 2028. Your initial thoughts on this news that, again, literally got broke about 20, 30 minutes ago.
Yeah, this will be the first time that these two teams meet in 2027. Obviously, the first time that either team travels to the opposing stadium. And this news is obviously something that follows the 9-game SEC schedule plus that P4 mandatory team as well. And Auburn, other than the teams that have non-conference rivalries, right, when you think of Georgia and Georgia Tech or Clemson, South Carolina, teams like that, Florida State, where those you would imagine are going to be their continued P4 game, all the other teams haven't given their major approval yet for a home at home, right? I mean, you're still waiting to see some of these other SEC teams announce who is going to be their big P4 team that they play each and every year. And so, yeah, Auburn going to a conference-less Notre Dame team is going to be a whole lot of fun. And you hope that it's a good matchup because the trajectory of one of the teams has definitely been a little bit more on the rise over the past couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, you start looking at the schedules for 27 and 28 for Auburn. We've talked a lot about what the 2026 schedule will be, which is just brutal for whoever the new head coach is. But you expect that the new head coach would get two shots at Notre Dame in 27 and then in 28. 2027... All right, Auburn has road trips to Notre Dame, Vanderbilt, Texas, Missouri, and Kentucky. No particular order, but again, road games in 27 to Notre Dame, Vanderbilt, Texas, Missouri, and Kentucky. Home games in 27 are Bama, Georgia, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and South Carolina. 2028 is when it really ramps up.
Yeah.
Auburn has home games against Notre Dame, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. Again, home games in 28 against Notre Dame, Vanderbilt, Tennessee, Mississippi State, and Ole Miss. And you go on the road to Bama, Georgia, LSU, Florida, and Arkansas. And thank God you got this home and home done, because 2028's home slate, similar to what next year looks like, sucks.
Yeah.
It's terrible. Vanderbilt, Ole Miss, Mississippi State, and Tennessee. You had two good games on there because we don't know what Vanderbilt's going to be in 2028. Do we really expect that to be a top 10 team 3 years from now? I don't, because I expect Clark Lee to be somewhere else, and a man by the name of Diego Pavia, unless he wins another, you know, lawsuit, he's not going to be playing college football in Nashville in 2028. So that won't get fans overly excited. Mississippi State won't get fans overly excited. I expect Ole Miss and Tennessee will. But adding that home game of Notre Dame in 2028 is a really, really big deal.
It is. I mean, again, that will be the first time that Notre Dame ever travels inside Jordan-Hare Stadium. And so it's awesome from a fan perspective, from a player perspective, from a historic and tradition standpoint. You saw the video, or if you haven't, at Auburn just posted something, a little minute graphic of saying tradition meets tradition. And it shows a bunch of the historic moments from both of those teams, and by no means a rivalry, but two teams that you feel like definitely know a lot about one another from a standpoint of just hearing from the just passage of college football. But how awesome is it to be able to get somebody new, right? A new jersey that you've never seen before. Welcome into your own stadium.
So Auburn will take on Notre Dame 2027 and 2028. Auburn will also take on Miami in 2029 and 2030. Now, we do know the dates that Auburn will be playing Notre Dame. Tigers will travel to South Bend on September 25th of 2027. Notre Dame will come back to Auburn in October 28th. Of 2028. So Auburn goes to Notre Dame late September. Notre Dame comes to Auburn in late October, which
means in the middle of SEC play.
In the heart of SEC play. So no breaks. No. I mean, nothing. This also shows me, though, Christian, that in the new era of more conference games and taking off some of these weaker opponents, that traditional scheduling isn't as important, which has been something we've seen over recent years.
You mean from the standpoint of a cupcake game to start the season or two of them, and then the cupcake game between your two rivals at the end of the year?
Yeah, I mean, having Notre Dame thrown at the end of October in 2028, I mean, that's as untraditional as it gets for Auburn in the SEC. I mean, I don't remember the last time Auburn's played a game like that in the middle of the season. You play those games in September, right? You've played Oregon in September. You played Penn State in September. You played California in September. You played Baylor in September or late August.
It's basically the standpoint of you'd play 4 to 5 SEC games and then Notre Dame.
And then 4 more SEC games.
Yeah.
That's brutal. I mean, that's exciting. It's cool. It sets up for a very unique situation. I'm pumped. I think this is cool. I think these are two teams that have some serious history and tradition individually. And the fact that you get to have these on the schedule and another opportunity to take on some big-name teams. And hopefully Auburn can, continue its pretty good play against P4 teams outside of the SEC. Your win against Oregon, your two wins against Cal, your win against Baylor. Obviously, you dropped the games against Penn State, so this would be a chance to bounce back from that.
Marcus Freeman, Auburn doesn't have a head coach. He has the chance to do one of the greatest things ever.
Yeah, don't bank on that. That ain't happening. So,
could you imagine?
No, it ain't happening. Auburn and Notre Dame decide on a home-and-home in 2027 and 2028. Auburn will travel to Notre Dame in September of 27. Notre Dame will take a trip down to the Plains in October of 2028. But we step aside and come back, talk a little Georgia, as Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 joins us next.
You're 30 minutes into On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Now back to the studio with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
30 minutes into hour number one here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. And we get to the phone lines and welcome in our usual Wednesday guest at 2:30. He's been with us for quite some time now, and he covers the Georgia Bulldogs better than anybody. Jordan Hill, who writes for Dogs 247, is with us now. What's going on, man? Crossover season is officially here, which means you'll start sleeping in, what, May or June?
Yeah, what's the John Rothstein tweet? We sleep in May. That's basically where we're at, but no busy time, like you said, football, basketball, but the good thing is it gives us plenty to talk about. Happy to dive into both of it with you guys.
Well, we'll start, of course, on the football side of things, where Georgia continues to play at a high level, now ranked 5th in the country with the latest college football playoff rankings. We'll get to those in just a second, but to remind people, Georgia's on a 4-game win streak after beating Kentucky, Auburn, and getting those wins there, then beating Ole Miss in what was a huge game for the Dogs, and then taking down Florida 24-20. What have you seen the biggest differences are, Jordan, since the loss to Alabama 24-21 in this 4-game win streak for Georgia that they could carry into, I don't want to say an easy back half of the schedule, but definitely one that they could handle, I think.
Well, I think the biggest thing is that this group just refuses to back down. And I would honestly say that was even true in the loss to Alabama. I mean, they were the 4th-and-1 away from, you know, being in position to at least take that lead. There was about 10 minutes left at the time in that game against Alabama. And it's just a team that, you know, doesn't play lights out, doesn't play, you know, games where they're just absolutely dominating people. But I think you just see that a whole lot less often these days with the state of the SEC, especially just with how rosters have been built. And, you know, I think the margins between the different SEC programs are a lot smaller than we'd seen in the past. And yeah, I mean, my thing coming off of the 24-20 win over Florida, I mean, defense had its back against the wall, which has been the case a few times this season. They get a big 4th-down stop and then they immediately get the ball and go on offense and go right down the field, and Chauncey Bowen scores a touchdown to give Georgia the lead. So it's a situation where I know that the fans are worn out, you know, trying to follow along, trying to, you know, look for an opportunity for Georgia to play a complete 60. You know, I'd say maybe not since the Kentucky game they've really done that, but, you know, you're still playing some really elite talent, you know, some elite competition, and you continue to find ways to win. And I know that it can be stressful for the folks watching, but Georgia's in the thick of this playoff hunt, and they've shown that they're not going to back down in big situations, which, you know, if you're going to know something about a team in early November, that is a very valuable piece of information to have.
Well, yeah, Jordan, you mentioned Georgia escapes the largest outdoor cocktail party, 24-20 over the Florida Gators, moved to 7-1, 5-1 in the SEC. How relieving is it on the offensive side of the football now that you feel like you have that go-to target in Zachariah Branch out wide? You feel like it's been quite some time since you've had that go-to guy that you feel like you can rely on any single time you need to move the chains, whether that's behind the line of scrimmage or downfield. He goes 10 catches, 112 yards. How relieving is it for Georgia fans to have somebody like that out wide once again?
I think the biggest thing is how relieving it is for Gunnar Stockton. Sure. I mean, he knows in tough situations where he can go with the football, and I kind of feel like that Florida game was something of a test of just how Georgia would play without Colby Young, who suffered a leg fracture in the Ole Miss game. Probably unlikely we're going to see him at the very least in the regular season. We may not see him even if Georgia makes a playoff run, but you saw in big situations. I think about what wound up being the go-ahead touchdown drive. Georgia gets them a 3rd and 8, and who does Gunnar Stockton throw to downfield but Zachariah Branch? And I feel like in recent games they've started doing a better job of getting him the ball down the field. A lot of the times they've been targeting him, it's like throw it to him in the flats and have those guys block for him and try to spring him. But he had a big catch in that drive, and he's been fantastic. I don't know that Georgia could ask any more of Zachariah Branch. He's been everything that Georgia hoped he would be. And you look at tough situations, and you know that, one, you can go to Zachariah Branch if you need to, but two, he can be a really useful decoy. Noah Thomas's touchdown in the 3rd quarter, Zachariah Branch kind of leaks out like it's going to be a screen, and it gets the Florida secondary's attention. And Noah Thomas runs by him down the field and winds up catching a touchdown. So good play callers find ways to utilize guys even when they don't get the ball. Thought that was a great example of Mike Bobo, knowing that everybody's paying attention to number one and taking advantage and helping another receiver make a play instead.
Georgia takes down Florida 24-20. They've got 4 games left in the regular season. On the road at Mississippi State this weekend, they'll host Texas next weekend, which has gotten really, really interesting. It was fascinating at the start, and then Texas started losing a couple. It got a little less interesting, and now that one has a chance to be a really fun one. Then home against Charlotte in the game against Georgia Tech. We're talking with Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 here on ESPN 106.7, and I want to come back to the schedule in just a moment, because Georgia is now the 5th-ranked team in the first college football playoff rankings of the season that came out last night, paired up with the 12th seed Memphis and a potential matchup with Alabama in the 2nd round. Do you feel that that's fair for Georgia right now in the college football playoff rankings and the college football playoff bracket, given what's been going on so far this season?
Yeah, I think it's totally fair. Georgia's got the 1 loss. You know, your top 3 teams, Ohio State, Indiana, and Texas A&M without a loss. Alabama next up, who beat Georgia, and then Georgia right there. So no surprises there, really. You know, I did my best before we did our Junkyard Dogcast podcast on Tuesday night to kind of project what I thought, you know, the rankings would wind up being. And pretty much, I mean, I thought it was pretty true to what I expected. I think the biggest surprise was sort of trying to figure out how they would look at Notre Dame and Miami. I was a little surprised by that. But to know on the whole, I think Georgia, very fair to be at 5. And, you know, if you're a Georgia fan, that tells you they are in great shape. They just got to continue to take care of business and can't really avoid many slip-ups just because of how many teams are in the hunt right now. It's going to be tough if you're an SEC team with a couple of losses. It gets very tricky when it comes to losing two games and still feeling good about where you are.
Yeah, well, that was my follow-up with the schedule that I brought up before, is with Georgia's record and their ranking, right, 7-1 overall, fifth in the college football playoff, those games against Mississippi State, 11th-ranked Texas, Charlotte, and 17th-ranked Georgia Tech. I mean, in your opinion, Jordan, what does Georgia have to do? What can they afford to do? And more importantly, what can they afford not to do if they still want to find themselves playing in the postseason?
Well, it's hard to predict for sure because so many variables got to play out with these other teams. I think that there's a world where Georgia could lose two games and still make the playoff. Now, the caveat I'll throw on that is probably can't afford to lose to Texas because Texas is right there. You know, I think if you are looking at it from a Georgia perspective of what can you do as far as being 10-2 at the end of the year and still feel good about your playoff hopes, you know, if you'd really rather not lose to Texas, you know, maybe the Mississippi State game this upcoming weekend is the one that you could most afford to lose because Mississippi State's not in the hunt. Because if you lose to Texas, obviously that makes Texas's case a lot stronger. And I think a lot of head-to-head matchups are going to be weighed very heavily when we get down to it this year. And then Georgia Tech, too, is right there still in the hunt after their first loss of the season. So Georgia could just make it very easy on itself and win the rest of these games. You don't have to kind of play this game. But, no, it's definitely going to be a tough needle to thread if you are talking about 10-2. It all depends on who those losses are to. And if it's to someone who's right there in the mix, too, it's going to make it very, very difficult to try to make your case of being in the playoffs.
And Jordan, obviously there's still a lot of time left, as we know, in the college football season. And Georgia would by no means complain about winning in the first round and being able to host at Sanford Stadium. But what was the reaction? Was it a little bit of an eye roll once again that Alabama and Georgia as of now were set to match up in the second round? Or do you feel like Georgia fans would be fired up to try and get that revenge this year?
I think one thing is just, I think the fans understand it's way too early to know for sure who the matchup's going to be. We had this conversation. Some of the other beat writers at one point last year, we were talking about should we go ahead and book somewhere to stay in State College, expecting Georgia and Penn State. You know, it's just so early to kind of get your hopes up or to start dreading, you know, what could be a potential matchup. But I think there's the understanding if Georgia does make the playoff that there's a very high likelihood that you're going to play Alabama at some point. And that's been the one thorn in Kirby Smart's side. He has struggled to beat Alabama. They lost at home this year, and that snapped, I think, about a 33-game home winning streak. So I don't know that Georgia fans have really gotten up in arms about it right now just because there's about another month left to play out. But I think there is that understanding. If you want to go win a national title, it's fairly likely that you'll have to beat the Crimson Tide to get there.
We got our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 on the phone lines here during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. And do want to flip to the hardwood. We mentioned it's crossover season and now in full swing. As Mike White and Georgia basketball started the season this week, they hosted Bellarmine and dropped triple digits, did the Georgia Bulldogs. 104-59, played well defensively, extremely well offensively. Your thoughts and takeaways from Georgia's season opening win, 104-59 over Bellarmine this week.
Yeah, it was a really good start for Georgia. Cal transfer Jeremiah Wilkinson with 15 points, Blue Kane with 15 points. You win it by 45, the largest margin of victory for Georgia in a season opener since 1986. So that was definitely a strong start for Georgia. Took care of business. You know, I think that they are really looking to push the pace this year, and I think you saw that with how many fast break points they had. I think they ended up with 31. Did a very good job defensively, turning Bellarmine over, making life difficult. Very interested to see, guys. They play again tonight. So they've had a quick turnaround. They're going to play at 6 p.m. Central Time against Maryland Eastern Shore. And I don't know if y'all saw this on Monday, but the Hawks took Georgia Tech to overtime. So this is no pushover. But good first test on Monday. But Georgia will see how quickly they can kind of turn the page, get ready, and then tonight, they'll be looking to get to 2-0.
Well, if Georgia's looking to be a team that pushes the pace, and clearly they did with 104 points, only turning the basketball over six times, Jordan, is pretty impressive in a 40-minute ball game.
Absolutely. I think they were thrilled with how they played. They were not really happy last season, as good as they were, and obviously to be back in the NCAA tournament. Their assist-to-turnover ratio, Mike White was very frustrated throughout that season about the number of times they turned it over and how that cost them in some big moments. So, yeah, first time out, I'd say that was a success. They've actually got three games this week, the game tonight, and then they play Morehead State on Sunday. So they are definitely getting their money's worth early on. We'll see if they could replicate their success from the season opener tonight and then see if it is able to carry over into the weekend.
Yeah, some of those other games on the Georgia non-conference schedule, Georgia Tech, a team you mentioned a moment ago, Xavier, Florida State, Cincinnati in there as well, before Georgia will host Auburn in the SEC opener on January 3rd. He is Jordan Hill of Dogs 247, covers Georgia better than anybody. We're so appreciative to have him with us each and every Wednesday, a part of our show here on ESPN 106.7. Tell the people where they can find you, all your coverage, and I assume you'll be there tonight covering Georgia basketball.
Oh, you know it, and Dogs 24/7 is where you can follow along, dogs247.com, on Twitter at Jordan Davis Hill, on Twitter at Dogs247. So, yeah, going to check out this game on Wednesday and then get ready on Friday to head out to Starkville. We got an early one, 11 a.m. local kick on Saturday morning, Georgia-Mississippi State. But we'll be up, rise and shine, ready to roll, and should be a fun battle of the Bulldogs out there in Starkville for this one.
And Jordan, I totally forgot to ask, meant to ask when we were talking a little bit of football. Auburn and Notre Dame just announced their home and home in 27 and 28. Does Georgia still have their ones with Florida State and Ohio State here coming up in the future?
So they're on the books right now. I think the Florida State one is the one to kind of keep an eye on with the SEC moving to 9 games.
Sure.
Because I think next year, right now, they've got 4 still on the books. I know there's Tennessee State. I think it's Louisville, Western Kentucky, and Florida State. So I don't know if those will last. The Ohio State one is still on the books. That's still several years away, but we'll have to see how it plays out with the 9-game schedule.
Yeah, those would be cool. And again, Auburn getting Notre Dame on the schedule for 27 and 28. Jordan, we appreciate you, my friend. Always appreciate the time and look forward to our conversations every week, and we'll do it again next Wednesday.
All right, sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Jordan Hill, Dogs247. Check him out. Again, Dogs247.com. Any of your Georgia coverage, any of your Georgia needs, or if you want to learn more about the basketball team, again, drop triple digits on Bellarmine on the opener, 104-59. And then, yeah, I missed that. Maryland Eastern Shore, the Hawks, baby. They did. Took Georgia Tech to overtime.
Yeah,
that's
we know
Georgia
nothing
plays
about
tonight.
That.
Yeah, imagine going to overtime.
Imagine going to overtime at home.
In your
against,
opener.
Against a smaller team in your opener.
Yeah, I mean, come on, man. I mean, imagine doing that. Could not be
Alabama. Looking at the schedule just upcoming for Georgia, you would imagine some of this would change, but as of right now, 2027, they have slated Florida State, at Florida State, Louisville, and at Georgia Tech.
For football?
Yeah.
No way
that they would play all of those.
3 ACC teams?
And then 29 is at Clemson, at Georgia Tech. And then 2030 is Clemson, North Carolina A&T, Ohio State, and Georgia Tech, all slated to be at home.
Yeah, I just don't see that happening.
I don't either.
Which sucks, because you want the fans to get that. But unless the only way that those that amount of non-conference P4 games happens is with playoff expansion. Because playoff expansion gives you a little bit more grace to where you can afford another loss.
Yeah.
Right? If you go to a 16 or a 18 or 24 or whatever number that they've decided or will decide on, right? If you expand the playoffs, more teams get in, which means you don't have to have as good of a record, meaning you can afford an extra loss, which would, I would assume, right, make teams more willing to take on a tougher schedule.
To just play 12 P4 games.
Yeah, play 12 of those. Or heck, you could still play 10 or 11 of them, but knowing in the back of your mind,
give you 11 in one starter game.
Yeah, you can still go 9-3 in the season and still make it to the college football playoff. It would make it more NFL-like.
Yeah, very much so. And if that's the case, if they're going to do something like that and make the expansion and give it more teams, how long until you see 16 SEC teams break off into 4-team pods and one team makes it out each
year. Well, that
or
just the college football super conference, right?
Yeah.
That's what we've talked about, too, is take however many, 36 or whatever it is, whatever the math works out to be, and we're going to go do our own thing, and we don't really care what Oklahoma State wants to do.
And make it to where there's no true playoff committee, because it's like the NFL. You know that you have to win two of your next three, and this team has to lose one of their next two for you to make the playoffs.
I mean, there's never any debate in the NFL on who makes and misses the playoffs. Ever. Never, ever, ever. It's all based off math.
And in week eight, there's already crazy different formulas of every single scenario that could go down.
Yeah, exactly. So, again, we appreciate Jordan hopping on with us each and every week here on ESPN 106.7. We'll take our final break, come back, and wrap up hour number one, where then we have a lot more football and coaching search talk to get into hour number two.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin, online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Wrapping up hour number one here on ESPN 106.7. Got a couple of minutes before we get into hour number two, where phone lines are wide open at this point. You can be a part of the show if you want to talk about anything that's on your mind in the sports world. We'd love to hear from you. 334-321-1390. You can also shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box at 334-784-1067. We got about a minute or so, and something you wanted to bring up quickly.
Yeah.
Dabo Swinney has put himself in the headlines again with, believe it or not, another rant.
It is another rant, but this one, there finally might be people that agree with him. This is not the, well, if they fire me, I don't even blame them at this point. It's not one of those, but he says, this is just referring to officiating across college football. It says, quote, in the meantime, we've got gambling issues going on, people being suspended, all of that kind of stuff. I mean, refs are people too. It ain't just the coaches and players. And if it's a part of the game, then by God, they ought to be a part of the game. And they ought to be a part of the held accountable. And they ought to be a part of the consequences as well, not just behind some shadowy curtain like they ought to have no answer for anything.
I mean, haven't fans been saying that for about 25 years?
Yeah.
They've been saying it my whole life, oh, this is rigged. This game was rigged. That wasn't a foul. They shot more free throws, or he threw that ghost holding penalty in there. Like,
yeah,
fans have been saying that forever.
And then the funniest thing is, you watch coaches walk their way to the sideline and shake hands, and as soon as the game ends, the officials get that police escort and they sprint off the field or sprint off the court, and you never hear from them until the very first penalty the very next week.
I mean, he's right, though. You've got investigations going on with coaches and players and things like that and all these professional sports.
Yet those are the people that are completely clean.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure there's a fine line drawn from players and coaches to officials, because they have nothing to do with that.
And good thing officials do not react emotionally whatsoever.
You know how you change that?
How?
You know what doesn't have emotions? Computers. Yet. Until they do, and then they rise up and take over the world. I'm convinced it's going to happen. AI scares the crap out of me.
And it starts in college football.
AI balls and strikes don't scare me, though. Make that happen in 2026, baby. It will. Okay, hour number one's in the book. Stick around. We're talking more coaching search coming up in hour number two.
The following is an Auburn Network production. You are on the line, live on ESPN 106.7, ESPNAU.com, and the Radio Alabama app. To be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067. Bringing you the insight and passion surrounding Auburn athletics, the SEC, and more. This is what sports talk radio should be. Lock it in right here on Auburn Opelika's sports leader, ESPN 106.7. Now, live from Auburn, Alabama, with the guys who tell it like it is and hold nothing back. You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin.
You're on the line here on ESPN 106.7 Auburn Opelika Sports Leader. Happy Wednesday, everybody. Hope you're doing well as we get underway here in hour number two during On the Line on ESPN 106.7. It is the show that tells you like it is and holds nothing back. I'm your man, Jacob Goins. Across from me is Christian Griffin. We appreciate you being with us on another gorgeous day in the Auburn Opelika area. And getting underway here in hour number two. If you missed any of the first hour, you can go back and listen to the podcast version of the show. I do have to post yesterday, so apologies for that. I know. You can boo me if you want to. I
don't have that hotkey ready yet. So, I need to get it right here.
So I do need to post yesterday, so apologies for that. But I will do that, and I will post today's as well, so you can go back and listen to yesterday's fun conversation and today's in hour number one, where we talked about the college football playoff rankings, also talked about Auburn football agreeing to a home-and-home with Notre Dame in 2027 and 2028. And we talked to Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 to get caught up on all things Georgia athletics. So that was all in hour number one. If you missed it, check it out in the podcast center on our station website at ESPNAU.com.
Here in hour number two, we continue our conversation that we opened up yesterday, and it's just coaching search. It's got names galore, and we get to talk a little bit about our candidates. Want to hear your candidates in there as well. Again, the phone lines are open all of hour number two at 334-321-1390. Any questions, any quick hitters, or just your little list, the text box is wide open as well at 334-784-1067. We'll talk coaching search. We'll talk a little bit about Auburn and the college football playoff era, as there are some stats that will blow your mind on how far Auburn has dropped since the college football playoff has begun, and even more so in the past 4 years. And then at 3:30, we begin to look towards Auburn and Vandy just a little bit, if the coaching search doesn't carry us all the way through hour number two like it did yesterday.
Yep, and it did because of the phone lines, and they are open once again here on ESPN 106.7. Give us a call. Tell us what's on your mind. 334-321-1390. Again, 334-321-1390. Or you could shoot us a text in the on-the-line text box. If you have a name in mind or a couple of names in mind, let us know at 334-784-1067. We start hour number two by getting to the phone lines. And James, you're on the line, my friend. What's going on?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Got a couple comments. You know, this coaching search can go many different ways. But, you know, I'm just going to put it how I feel. You know, I think Auburn needs to quit chasing Alabama. They need to quit chasing Georgia and others like that. Auburn needs to concentrate on Auburn. And once they do that, I think they'll find themselves in a better position, because you know how it is. They hired Hugh Freeze because, you know, he beat Alabama twice while at Ole Miss. Everybody, you know, Nick Saban's gone. And I'll give Nick Saban his just due. I mean, the guy's, he was a great coach. But, you know, my take is they need to quit chasing these teams and take care of business. I think Auburn needs a hard-nosed coach, one that will instill discipline, one that's going to work hard and, you know, endless hours to make Auburn, bring them back to where they used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But with that being said, you know, I've listened to a lot of podcasts. It seems like that Kenny Dillingham is catching a lot of, you know, momentum. And that could be somebody just, you know, trying to have a great podcast. But here's a question that I'm going to ask you guys. Let's just say they bring in Kenny Dillingham. And I think somebody made a comment that possibly his quarterback could be a redshirt sophomore. He could follow him. Okay? Here's the question. Do you guys think that Deuce Knight will ever take the field for Auburn? I'm not talking about the last three games for this season. I'm talking about in 26 and beyond.
And I think that's a really good question, James. And we appreciate the call, my friend. Appreciate you listening and contributing to the show. Let's start with what he said first, and then we'll answer the conversations about Dillingham and Deuce Knight, because that is a growing conversation in itself.
He hit part two of the question, too, because I was ready to say yes.
Yeah, well, I think in terms of Auburn needing to worry about Auburn, I totally agree. I think Auburn for a long time has chased their rivals and has chased others around them. And some people may say, well, how are they supposed to stop doing that? What do you mean by that? And he kind of hit on it, is just go get somebody that's a hard worker, that's a winner. Go get a winner in today's era of college football. Go get somebody who's proven they can win.
Regardless of the level.
Regardless of the level, but in this decade. I'm not talking somebody that was winning games in 2012, okay? College football is more difficult, and it's so different than it's ever been. Don't go get somebody that was winning games a decade ago, and like he said too, because they beat Alabama once or twice.
Yeah, get the rival team off your resume from the standpoint of something that builds. When you walk in, you can set that piece of paper down for the interview, and it's okay. All right, everything looks okay. Oh, you beat Alabama twice.
Yeah. Ooh.
Wow.
Yeah, exactly.
You now jump to the very forefront of this entire conversation.
So I agree with that point, James. And I think Auburn just needs to go get a winner. Pete Nakos put out a stat yesterday, and it's fascinating. Auburn has not hired a first-time head coach since 1976. Let that sink in for a moment. Auburn football has not hired someone to be the head coach of Auburn in their first ever time being a head coach since 1976, which means they've continued to go after guys who are already head coaches or have been head coaches somewhere else.
Which is not always a bad thing.
No.
Until what conversation we talked about yesterday of where it seems like Auburn has become that landing pad for coaches that have fallen down a step, and you're at that point of now, I feel like that's where people are in agreement of that's what can't happen this time.
And so my point to that, before we get to the other points that James brought up as well, is what if it's time for Auburn to break that trend? What if it's time for Auburn to step out of its comfort zone and take a risk on someone who maybe isn't as proven as a true head coach, right? Because think about the names that we're talking about here. All the names, including Dillingham that he brought up, which we're getting to in just a second, Dillingham or Franklin or Summerall or Key or DJ Durkin, or all these guys have been head coaches or are head coaches. There are very few that have not been. The only one that I've heard that comes to mind is Brian Hartline at Ohio State. That's the one that comes to my mind. So keep that in mind, that maybe that's something Auburn needs to do, step outside of its comfort zone, and maybe hire a first-time head coach for the first time since 1976.
Yeah, go take the Oregon route with Dan Lanning, right? He was the defensive coordinator, and they realized he was young. They realized what he had in that from a winning mentality and the perspective of everything he wanted to be as a head coach, and they said, all right, we're going to take care of you. We're going to give you everything that you need resource-wise. We understand that it might be a couple of years because Dan Lanning wasn't ready to win a national championship as soon as he became the head coach of the Oregon Ducks. But now you look at everything that he's continuing to do, and he's still learning. Look at what he did last year in the first time that Oregon makes the playoffs. Not the first time, but the most recent time last year where they get the bye. And they don't look very good against Ohio State because he just continues to learn on the fly, but taking that perspective from it of he had never been there before, but you allow him to continue to learn being that first-time head coach.
Now, to move on to somebody who is a head coach and Kenny Dillingham, which is what James brought up, he says that he feels that name is starting to gain some momentum. Curious on how people feel right now about Kenny Dillingham. Give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a quick text, yes or no, at 334-784-1067. How do you feel about Dilly, about Kenny Dillingham, who, of course, was at Auburn a couple of years ago, was an offensive coordinator. He has since been the head coach at Arizona State since 2023. His record is fine. Okay, he's 20-15 overall in his first 3 years at Arizona State, which are his first 3 years as a head coach in general. Okay, he went 3-9 in year one at Arizona State. That program was in shambles. And then year two, boom, the spark, the turnaround, the hit, right? And he goes 11-3 and takes them to the college football playoff. Now, they've since taken a slight step back this year. Sam Levitt, their quarterback, is hurt. And James brought up that interesting stat or note or nugget as well. Sam Levitt does have eligibility left. Now, I don't think he could qualify for a medical redshirt this year, right? But coming into, or I guess after the 25 season, I think he has 2 years left. Is that right?
I mean, he's a true sophomore.
So, that's a possibility. If Auburn were to go the Kenny Dillingham route, I think Sam Levitt's a pretty darn good quarterback.
He's actually a redshirt sophomore. Apologies. He's a Michigan State year one.
That's right. And so, you could bring him here if Dillingham comes here. And I have no knowledge that there's any ill will in that room, right, or that relationship. So, I'm curious on how Auburn fans feel about Kenny Dillingham. As a young head coach who is clearly winning games at Arizona State, and if you can win at Arizona State, you can definitely win at Auburn.
Yeah, again, you're bringing somebody possibly in that knows the current level of college football. I mean, he was somebody that we talked about that we gave credit to last year because with the wild calendar and the transfer portal, he was sitting there basically talking to his players that were still wearing jerseys saying, hey, if this is not going to be your future home, please let me know. We will help make some sort of clip for you. We will do everything we can to put you on your way, but you can still practice. You can still be a part of this team, but no ill will towards what you want to do next season. And that's one of the first times that you've seen a coach take a very different response to the average fan base and average coaching perspective of the transfer portal. So I feel like that's a very interesting option. I mean, 2 days ago, he had the best odds to be Auburn's next head coach. I think Summerall now has jumped that just a little bit, but you bring in one of the guys again, you feel like that. Does it bring the risk of saying he's an offensive guy?
I mean, I would. I mean, he was the offensive coordinator at Auburn in 2019. Somebody just texted us in the text box and said somebody called Bo Nix and asked them how he feels about Kenny Dillingham. And saying that as a joke, yes, but also at the same time, I mean, that was a I feel like that was a very much love-hate relationship with Dillingham and Malzahn and Bo Nix in 2019. The highs were high, but the lows were extremely low that season on offense, too.
Yeah, I forgot. That was a weird.
Yeah.
You don't think about that and him being one mm-hmm. of those names in there.
Yeah. But, I mean, that's a cluttered room, right? I mean, that's another. Yes, Dillingham would be considered an offensive head coach, but then the question becomes, and I'll be honest, I don't know the exact stack at Arizona State in terms of who calls all the plays, but what would Dillingham's role be? Would he be that hands-on offensive head coach, or would he just be a contributor on offense as a head coach, right? I don't know what that would be at Auburn if he were to take the job. Now, if he brings his quarterback or brings players or brings his OC, now that you're talking about a whole can of worms right there.
Dillingham does not call plays at Arizona State.
So there you go. That's a positive. If you're in the Dillingham camp, I think that's a positive sign on if he were to take the Auburn job.
It says that he is involved in the offensive strategy, but when it comes to Saturdays, he steps away.
But he actually steps away.
He steps away. And
because Hugh Freeze said that too.
But Dillingham becomes the head coach.
Which is, that That's not, we act like that's such a crazy thing, but it's not. That's how it should be. That's what Hugh Freeze was supposed to do at Auburn.
Oh my goodness. They said this. He said that he learned that his in-game emotional decisions were, oh gosh. If you're in the Kenny Dillingham camp, this is going to make you even more excited. He said personally that his in-game decisions were not always the best for the team compared to the week-long preparation given to him by his offensive coordinator.
Jeez.
So that is why he stepped away from being the main play caller, because his emotions standing on the sideline were not always the best for what the offensive coordinator prepared the team to do all week long.
Which we've seen Dillingham get caught in some situations already and not make the right decision and be burned because of it. That was Lonnie who texted in about Bo Nix and Dillingham, and he said, my point was that Dillingham went with Bo Nix to Oregon, and I totally forgot about that. Dillingham was at Oregon in 2022 as the offensive coordinator and the quarterback's coach.
Jeez.
So, for a guy that's been around the block a few times, he's got a reputation, and I'm curious on how people truly feel about Kenny Dillingham. 334-321-1390. What's going on, Spectre? How are you on this Wednesday?
Hearing y'all talk, I haven't heard what Lonnie said. I'm assuming he was talking about Oregon and Bo Nix and Dillingham.
Yes.
And got wiped out 49-3.
He was talking about that whole situation, yeah.
Yeah, anybody that's in the Dillingham camp should take a look at what he has done against SEC teams.
As a head coach or an offensive coordinator or just in general?
Well, as an offensive coordinator, but as a head coach, I don't think he has played an SEC team.
They lost the state this year.
Yeah. Yeah, they went to Mississippi State and lost in week two, Spectre.
I can't hear you.
I said they went to Arizona State, went to Mississippi State in week two and lost.
Mississippi State and the SEC? Just kidding.
I thought we were really losing you there, Spectre.
No. Wait, I'm talking about an SEC team. He ain't good against Georgia.
But doesn't that sells the argument even more, does it not? If he can't beat Georgia and Alabama, that's one thing, but he lost to Mississippi State. I mean, that's dang near bottom of the SEC.
I'm telling you, it's unbelievable how we end up trying to get guys that have been here before and has not been successful. He was here with Malzahn and not successful. And why we keep going after guys that have connections, and like somebody said earlier, this, we need somebody that's fresh ideas, somebody that's new on the market. We don't need coaches that have been around decades and trying to bring their old schemes back to life again. It just doesn't work anymore.
Spectre, what's the selling point on if you could make the decision right now, who would it be?
It'd be Summerall, hands down.
Yeah.
The man's proven to be a winner. He knows how to coach kids today in this atmosphere. And to get losers like the guy from Penn State, Franklin, I just don't understand that either. I don't even know how he's even on the list.
Oh, he's on it. I'm telling you, he's on it. Believe me, you're preaching to the choir to me, Spectre. That's the last person I want to see in Auburn, Alabama.
Spectre, I heard that Jimbo Fisher was on your big board.
Well, Jimbo Fisher is an excellent offensive coordinator. He doesn't know anything about managing kids. Nothing at all.
Yeah.
And didn't Dillingham go to Texas A&M, or was it Durkin?
Durkin, yeah. I don't think Dillingham had time at A&M. I could be wrong. I don't think so. No, I don't think so.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. It was Durkin. But that's another thing. Durkin, when he was at Maryland, he had two losing seasons. Why is he on the list?
Yeah. I mean, 10 and 15 overall as a head coach.
Yeah, he's good as a defensive coordinator. But as a head coach, he's lost. He's like these guys are like Malzahn. Malzahn is an excellent offensive coordinator, but you can't put him as a head coach.
he don't know where the call plays or give it to somebody else.
Yeah, so you're a believer in not all coordinators can be head coaches, which is has clearly absolutely. Been proven. Yeah.
Absolutely.
All right, Spector, we appreciate the call, man. Always good to hear from you. Spector joining us on the phone lines. They are open if you want to be a part of the show. 334-321-1390. We need to get to a break. We'll come back, talk more coaching search right after this.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. If you want to be on the line, call 334-321-1390 or text 334-784-1067.
We are back here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, talking more coaching search and just getting kind of everybody's thoughts and feelings on pretty much all the different candidates that are out there. We just had a pretty good segment about Kenny Dillingham. Got some yeses, got some nos, got some yays, got some nays. Talked about pros and cons of Kenny Dillingham, who some people believe, Christian, is on the way up in terms of his relevancy in the Auburn coaching search, and a guy that's had his ups and downs, yes, but I mean, the list has definitely grown since the decision was made on Sunday afternoon that Hugh Freeze would no longer be the head coach. I mean, I can think of 10 or 12 that are on the short list, I guess, of possibilities. Most of them I mentioned are current head coaches, some of them are not, but I don't know. Curious on where people stand, though, because there's not one right answer, and you're not going to make everybody happy, but you still have a couple of weeks to make this decision. John Cohen said on Monday that he wants this to be done very shortly after the Iron Bowl.
Yeah, again, I think that'll help the most with a signing period. That also helps with being able to retain your players again with the new transfer portal era. You cannot enter until 5 days after the next head coach is announced to at least give them almost a week to be able to decide on if they want to stay with that coach or not. But again, looking at Dillingham, he's 20-15 overall as a head coach, which you mentioned after that 9-3 year, the big time turnaround. He won the Big 12 Coach of the Year last year in 2024. Won the Big 12 championship and was arguably a non-targeting penalty away from beating Texas as major double-digit underdogs.
Yeah, I mean, they were really close in that game and played extremely well. Now had some serious talent on that
close,
team.
Close, you say.
Yeah, believe it or not. Something we forgot to address that James called in about to start the hour was Deuce Knight. Forgot about that. He asked if Deuce Knight would play at all at Auburn, but what he meant and clarified at the end was, will Deuce Knight take any significant snaps at Auburn? Meaning not in the last three games of this year, will Deuce Knight play at Auburn in his actual career?
Yeah, and before he doubled down with that question, I think both of us were ready to say that, yes, there's a legitimate possibility because Durkin hinted at all three and said that they're evaluating all of the quarterbacks, and we halfway joked about it, but if you're Durkin, you sit down Deuce Knight and say, all right, this is my team now. This is your team now. Let's go out and let's go show what we can do. That way we can plead our case or do whatever we need to do for the 2025-2026 season or 2026-2027 season. But, yeah, I mean, that's where it's hard to imagine a world where he doesn't just because of everything that Auburn has – instilled in him and trying to win the recruiting. That being said, a lot of that all depends on who's going to be the next guy to make those decisions. And if Dillingham is that guy, he brings in Sam Levitt. Deuce Knight's not going to wait three more years to play.
My gut tells me that Deuce Knight will not play a significant snap here. I think he wants to. I think he wants to be here, but how many times do you see, a new coach bring in a new staff or, like you said, bring a quarterback with him too, and it's hard to force a new relationship, especially with the quarterback of all positions. So something could change, something could happen, but that's my answer. So we'll see what happens with Deuce Knight in the future of the quarterback room. So, all right, we'll take our bottom of the hour break. If you want to talk more coaching search, we can. If not, we'll start looking ahead to Vanderbilt this weekend.
We're halfway through hour number two. You've got 30 more minutes of On the Line on ESPN 106.7, Auburn Opelika's sports leader.
We've got 30 more minutes here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. He is Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. We appreciate you being with us. And if you want to talk more coaching search, give us a call, shoot us a text. We'd love to continue that, as that will be an ongoing conversation for the next several weeks. So you can give us a call, 334-321-1390, or shoot us a text in the On the Line text box at 334-784-1067 on who you want to see Auburn hire, who you don't want to see Auburn hire, maybe a dark horse out there as well. You can let us know right now. But it's Wednesday, my dudes. It's Wednesday, which means we flip the page, because believe it or not, Auburn football is still playing. And they have another game this weekend where they hit the road and head up to Nashville, Auburn North, and take on Vanderbilt in Nash Vegas. And so we will start to look at this game a little bit. And before we talk about Vanderbilt themselves, is it a stupid question for me to ask, Christian, if you feel better or worse about this game now that Hugh Freeze is not the coach, now that DJ Durkin is the interim? Do you feel any better or worse, or no change at all with what happened for Auburn this week?
I mean, I don't know if anybody feels better from the standpoint of just a new name, but I think the change, and I think the way that the team has responded during this week of practice, I feel like I'm excited to see if there's a difference in how things work, especially with Derek Nix now, the true play caller, giving him all week to essentially have 100% of the duties, because we knew that he was not the one that was calling plays throughout the season so far. We do have confirmation, again, according from the Montgomery Advertiser and Adam Cole, that Ashton Daniels will get the starting nod against Vanderbilt. And so there was a whole lot of conversation on that of who Durkin or Nix would decide to go to, but it will be Ashton Daniels. But I'm excited to see how this team rallies. You feel like it's been a topping point, or a talking point and a conversational point all season long about teams rallying behind their interim head coaches, and interested to see if the defense can bring a little bit of energy into the offense just now with Durkin, their guy, now leading the way.
I mean, I think with the changes being made of Derek Nix calling plays, and yeah, that's what we had heard and seen, was Ashton Daniels was taking the most one reps, and he will supposedly get the start.
Yeah, 3 hours ago it was.
And so I just think by default, it can't get worse. You just scored three points at home,
thanks to your defense,
at night against Kentucky, thanks to your defense. It literally cannot get any worse. And you just got rid of the guy who's responsible for that, and now the offensive coordinator will be calling plays. What a wild idea that is. And the team's practicing different. They're probably approaching this game different, approaching the travel different. I mean, by default, something has to change, and it literally can't be any worse offensively.
Well, that, and weirdly enough, despite Diego Pavia being the curse to Auburn over the last 2 years, you go and look at what he did last year. This is a game that Auburn lost 17-7 at home. Diego Pavia was 9 of 22 for 143 yards and 2 touchdowns. You look at the team stats, Vanderbilt had 227 yards of offense in this game. Auburn had 327, yet still found a way to lose. And so you hear all about Diego Pavia and what he was able to do, but DJ Durkin did a pretty dang good job against them last year, to where it feels like there could be a little bit of momentum where if the offense does anything, you're in a decent spot.
What is it about this Vanderbilt team to you that other than Diego Pavia that sticks out. I mean, I think you go back to look at their last four games, and they're all a little bit different, right? They go on the road to Tuscaloosa in a very hyped-up matchup with the Crimson Tide. They lose that game 30-14 on the road. They come back home, and they beat LSU, ultimately getting Brian Kelly fired. And they win that one 31-24. They then turn around and beat Missouri 17-10 in a home game. But then it was on the road against Texas last week where they lost 34-31, where Texas figured some things out. But that Vanderbilt defense, a couple of those plays were horrifically bad. Yeah. I mean, open field tackling was terrible. Texas, all they did was throw screen passes, and they just ran right by them.
Yeah, I saw something that said the Arch had like 150 passing yards and threw the ball 22 yards downfield.
I mean, after the first or second play, whatever that was of the game,
it was the swing past the Wingo.
Yeah, it was like, all right, and I said Texas will do that until they stop it, and they never could. And so those things about Vanderbilt I was saying while you were on the phone, all four of their last games went in different ways.
I think that, going back to answer your question, that right there is what makes the Vanderbilt team scary. We've talked about Clark Lee being one of the coaches that is perfectly fine and very comfortable in those 24-21 type of games where you rely on your team, you rely on the play calling, you rely on your defense to get a stop. If your offense needs to go win a shootout, it can. If it needs to win 17-10 at home, it can. There's so many different ways that the job can get done, and I think that's what makes this Vanderbilt team so scary. There's not one single thing that you can point at, unless that's Diego Pavia, of the reason why you can feel comfortable getting a win. Let's get to the phone lines, 334-321-1390. Had a really nice conversation with him yesterday, and we get Dak back on the phone lines once again here on this Wednesday afternoon. How are you, sir?
I'm great, man. What a beautiful day, right?
Yes, while the sun's up for a whole nother hour.
That's right. Oh, I hate when time changes, man. But, hey, I'm just blessed to be here, right?
Amen.
Well, the bottom line is it doesn't matter who calls plays this week. If we can't run the football effectively for four quarters, we ain't got a chance to win that game. I think if you looked at last year's Vanderbilt game, similar way, we could not run the football effectively throughout the game.
88 rushing yards in that game, Dak.
Yeah.
You averaged five and a half a carry, yet just didn't give it to number 27 at all.
Right. And it's going to take, somebody rushing for over 150 yards, or a total combination of two or three running backs rushing for almost 200 yards to win this game. As you said, Texas put pressure on those outside corners and safeties by making them make plays, and they couldn't do it effectively the whole game. That's why you throw screens and you throw quick screens and you do bubble screens, not just one time a game. You do it 5, 6, 8 times a game.
I mean, that's the Mike Bobo special, just moving down the field.
That's right, and that's something, that we've not seen a whole lot of. I believe, that Vanderbilt's defense is their defensive line and linebackers. I do think Texas did a great job of exposing Vanderbilt's weaknesses. So I hope they take a shot out of their playbook and also throw the ball downfield 6 to 8 times. Just one-on-one, 50-50 balls, that's what it becomes, But the bottom line is, after that game's over with, whoever rushes for the football effectively the whole day is going to win that ball game.
Well, the good news is, Dak, that Auburn's defensive front is one of the best in the country at stopping the run. I mean, they just don't give up those big chunk plays. They don't give up the inside zone. They don't break a whole lot. And so Vanderbilt's not worried about putting the ball in the hands of Diego Pavia, but I think they're going to have to on Saturday.
I do, too. I think that's the one advantage they do have, is if we're stopping the run game, but him getting out, making plays with his legs is what concerns me.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to keep the ball away from him is what we need to do as much as possible. Can we win that game? Absolutely, I think we can. I'm excited. I'm excited to see if there's something different, if we can see something different from this offense. I believe the defense will be ready to play. I think they got something to prove now. more than ever, especially against Vanderbilt. You know, I think this is a true test too to how we can do against Alabama, because Vanderbilt is a physical team.
Yeah.
And if we can match up with their physicality on the road, then we can play with Alabama at home, and possibly, you know, who knows what can happen at home on that last game. But yeah, we're going to have to run the football a lot more than what we've done.
Mm-hmm. Well, that you feel like with Vanderbilt and Diego Pavi and how Love Clark Lee loves moving him outside the pocket, you could almost see Auburn – kind of like what you see in basketball, play the box in one, right, where everybody plays what they need to do, and then there's one guy guarding their best player. You saw Auburn do it with Xavier Atkins and Taylen Green with Arkansas. You also saw him, what feels like every single week, with Xavier Atkins getting in the backfield. Xavier Atkins could be a very big difference maker in this game, because it's simply, hey, you got eyes on Diego Pavia. If he breaks the pocket, you go get after him and bring some pressure.
Absolutely. I think the difference maker in this game for Vanderbilt, it's going to be that tight end that's so good. He runs routes like a wideout, but he's big like a tight end.
Yeah, Stowers.
And it seems like guys like that has always hurt us. And, you know, if you're really keying in on Pavier, then, you know, that leaves, you know, a little bit more room for that guy to work his magic. Because, you know, really, besides the quarterback and that tight end, nobody they have really scares me.
Right.
So, you know, I'm sure Coach will have a good plan for it, though.
Yeah, he will. Dak, we appreciate it, brother. Always
thanks,
good to
man.
Hear from you. And, you know, I look at DJ Durkin as the defensive guy, and he mentioned on Monday about – he was asked about the offense and if he's had a chance to talk to those guys and what his role will be, and he mentioned how, you know, he's not going to he's not gonna overstep his welcome or
yeah,
anything
he's not
like
putting
that.
On two hats.
But he said he's had conversations – throughout the year, and he will continue to do so now, especially as the head coach of he's had conversations with guys like Derek Nix from the defensive perspective of, hey, this is what we're seeing, this is what we're trying to do, can you do this, let's practice this, right? He said they've had those conversations.
Which you hope happens all season long.
Well, yeah, but where I'm going with this is now that DJ Durkin is the interim head coach, and I think, again, the best defensive coordinator in the country, he now has the power and hopefully the stones to walk into the offensive meeting room and say, okay, here's what I've seen with this offense. I've been the defensive coordinator all year. Hasn't really been my place to say anything, but here's what I see is the issues here.
Yeah, I was never really welcomed in the doors just because I didn't want to overstep and essentially take a shot at the head coach.
Because he wouldn't want Derek Nix or anybody else to walk into his meeting room and say, hey, I can't believe you ran that play last week. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But now that DJ Durkin is the interim and this is his program for the next month, I'm fascinated to see and hear or wonder if that is happening when he walks in and says, okay, I've gone back and really studied our offensive film over the last couple of days. Here's what I've seen, and it's not good. Here's what I... from my defensive professional standpoint, here's what I recommend that we do. What do you think about X, Y, and Z?
Yeah.
Why not? I mean, why not? What you're doing, is it working? And we don't know what the offense will truly look like with Derek Nix calling plays or if anything's going to be implemented. I think it'll be hard to put new things in at this point in the season, but just situational awareness from the offense and what DJ Durkin's what's the word I'm looking for? His input on it, it will be.
I mean, you feel like that would be what you would hope. And again, we don't know what happens in those meetings, but my goodness, you would hope that you as the offense would take DJ Durkin's advice on, hey, if you were going up against our game plan, what would you run? Where do you see our holes on what works versus what doesn't?
Would you be worried about? If I'm Derek Nix, that's the first question I ask DJ Durkin. And I say, if you were game planning us like you do in practice, what are you most worried about? And I guarantee I know his answer.
And Durkin says, well, I studied the offense. I threw up three times, but I did find out that this is actually something you do good.
And then number eight walks through the halls, and it's like, wait, that guy's still on the team?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. That's the one I'm worried about. I'm worried about Cam Coleman. I'm worried about Jeremiah Cobb. I'm worried about Perry Thompson. I'm worried about the tight ends. I'm worried about this, this, and this. But then you got to start talking about what needs to change. And against this Vanderbilt team, that defensive line is nasty. And Dak just talked about how physical they are. If Auburn doesn't make some changes on the offensive line, the Tigers will get bullied on Saturday. Bullied.
Not even having to send one more.
No. They'll get bullied on a 3 or 4 man rush because they can't stop it. And Vanderbilt will bring all sorts of pressures and creates turnovers and gets after it. That's what Vanderbilt will do. And so Auburn has to find a way to make those necessary changes. And again, I go back to, by default, something has to give. Something has to change. Surely it won't look the exact same that it has the past several weeks.
Vanderbilt averages just 3.7 yards per rush defensively. And they allow 250 passing yards per game, which that's 103rd in the country. But they're 34th in rush defense.
Yeah. But, I mean, you still have to set that narrative, set that precedence, right? You still have to prove that Auburn, that you can run the ball. And Auburn's gone up against better rush defenses than that this year.
It is.
And they've still done it.
Which it's what makes the story even more interesting because, again, we've talked about it all season long about there's very little struggles in offense or in the Auburn offensive line running the football.
Mm-hmm.
It's when every time they have to do their little dropbacks, every single time, you feel like there is pressure in the backfield, even so much so where we talked about it on Monday. Auburn is dead last in giving up sacks per game. Out of the 136 teams in the FBS, Auburn is 136th. There's a lot of times we say, gosh, Auburn's got to be the worst. No, they are the worst in giving up sacks in college football.
You got to make a change. Somehow, some way, personnel, formation, I don't care. Make some sort of a change up front.
Do exactly what we saw Texas do. Get the ball out of whoever the heck claps his hands and takes the snaps.
Yep.
You got Malcolm Simmons on one side. You got Eric Singleton on the other side. You got the jet sweeps, which we didn't see any of on Saturday nights. Make their corners, make their skinny ankles go make plays outside the front seven tackle box.
We'll see what happens. All right, let's take our final break. We'll come back, wrap it up here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line.
You are on the line with Jacob Goins and Christian Griffin. Online at ESPNAU.com and on the Radio Alabama app.
Winding down here on the Wednesday edition of On the Line on ESPN 106.7. Been a busy show today. Been good, though. We've had a guest in hour number one, our man Jordan Hill of Dogs 247 was with us, as he is every Wednesday, to talk Georgia football, a little Georgia basketball, as well as the Dogs are back in action tonight at Stegman Coliseum. And so that was in hour one. Talked about the college football playoff rankings, talked about the coaching search for Auburn, and started to talk a little Auburn and Vanderbilt this Saturday. So all of that was on the show today. If you missed it, we'll have the podcast posted for you a little bit later after the show today, so be sure you go back and check that out wherever you get your podcast or at ESPNAU.com. In the podcast center, a reminder that also on our station website, we've got the high school football playoff brackets up there. So if you want to get more information on that, because we'll be talking more about that tomorrow and Friday, you can go check those out. Of all the teams that we cover, the entire brackets for Auburn High, Lee Scott, etc. So you can go check all that out. And speaking of high school football, we will talk some more of that tomorrow as we have three guests coming on the show tomorrow afternoon. We'll have Brad Law from the Auburn Sports Network get his thoughts on Auburn coaching change, on a basketball season underway, right, and some more things about that, plus the broadcast on Saturday. Then we'll talk to head coach Keith Etheridge of Auburn High School Football. Took the week off last week. Excited to get him back on the show tomorrow to preview Auburn and Vestavia Hills. And then Chris Gordy of Locked On SEC will join us at 3:30 tomorrow. So a jam-packed show on Thursday and then free-for-all Friday with Lee Sterling. Special guest in hour number one at 2:30 that we cannot give away yet, but we will. And then a picks-oriented hour number two.
And we did the cardinal sin of looking at the unnamed weather app.
Oh, I've looked
Friday
at it every day.
Friday looks like.
Yeah, I've broken it twice. I've looked every day.
And, man, sunny and 75 today, sunny and 76 tomorrow. And then next Monday is a little bit warmer.
Yeah.
Or a little bit not rainier. It's not supposed to be warmer. Next Monday, high of 46.
Yeah, it goes from like 70-something to 40-something. Pretty crazy. Friday, as of now, my name weather app doesn't look terrible for Friday anymore.
Okay.
Partly cloudy, high around 75. We'll only 24% chance of rain. So surely that won't change between now and 7 o'clock on Friday night, right? No,
it's rigged. It's rigged.
Yeah, it's, I don't know. Anyway, all right, we're out of time. We got to go. The drive's coming up, so stick around. They'll have you for another 2 hours, and then we're back tomorrow, 2 to 4, right here on ESPN 106.7. Until then, he's Christian Griffin. I'm Jacob Goins. Stay safe. We'll talk to you later.